Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, October 12, 2016. President Kiir appeared today after wild rumors that he died on Monday.
I was not dead, and those people who were creating this life are not the ones responsible for my life. Somebody who created me knows when he will call me. So I warn everybody to remain calm.
And the government condemns recent killings, saying they are the work of Riek Machar.
Anybody who harbors a criminal is a criminal. So if you don't want to harbor a criminal, send him away from your area so that you are free. Otherwise, you will be treated the same way.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A rumor that began online yesterday that President Salva Kiir is dead have been squashed. President Kiir appeared today leading a procession in an open vehicle, waving to civilians in the streets of Juba. Speaking to reporters at a press conference after the procession, President slammed those rumors, adding that he did not give orders to Paul Malong, SPLA chief of staff, to commit violence against South Sudanese.
Now, if I was dead, this is a contradiction I'm saying. If I was dead, how did I come back to life to come and give orders to the chief of general staff? This was not true. I was not dead. And those people who were creating this life are not the ones responsible for my life. Somebody who created me knows when he will call me. So I warn everybody to remain calm.
President Kiir can be seen alongside Paul Malong and presidential spokesman Michael Makuei, along with other members of the cabinet riding behind a pickup truck. Michael Thon Mangok, who witnessed the presidential procession, told VOA that since last night up until early this morning, there were still persistent rumors about the president's health. Thon says it was reassuring to see President Kiir today with his own eyes. He was one of the many people who turned out to the streets of the capital, waving and yelling praises at the president. President Kiir also took a moment during the press conference seen on South Sudan Broadcasting Corporation, which had been called a state television, to demand residents to remain calm following the recent killings of civilians along the Juba-Yei Road.
As for the parents and the relatives of the victims who lost their lives in these tragic incidents, I want to calm them down by telling them that let them remain calm. And nobody should take the law into his or her own hand to go and revenge. It is no time for revenging. It is time for forgiveness. Even if we get them today, those who killed the people, we can still forgive them. Because they don't know what they are doing.
The audio of President Kiir is provided by South Sudan Broadcasting Corporation. The South Sudan government is condemning the recent killings in the country. Government spokesman Michael Makuei told reporters in Juba today that the armed groups killing civilians along the roads are loyal to former first Vice President Riek Machar. Tito Justin reports for VOA from Juba.
Dozens of civilians were killed by gunmen in the recent days on the Juba-Kajukeji Road, the Yei Juba Road, on Nimle Highway and on the Torit-Lafon Road. No arrests have been made since the rampant killings started earlier this year. Makuei says the government regrets what he calls the unfortunate incidents. He extended his condolences to the families and friends of the 21 people killed on the Juba-Yei Road last weekend. He claims the culprits are associates of rebel leader Riek Machar, who fled the country in the July, and says the government will deal with them. The minister is calling on IGAD Plus and the international community to work with the transitional government of national unity to designate the groups as terrorists.
We appeal to the region and to the international community to condemn these terrorist acts. These rebels who are causing all this in the eyes of the government are terrorists and should be declared terrorists.
Makuei says The government will take appropriate measures against those who are perpetrating crimes against innocent civilians, but did not elaborate. He says the act of killing innocent women and children is deplorable.
The power they want, if they are at all in search of power, the power is not in the hands of these innocent children and women. The power is not in the hands of these innocent civilians who are being killed on the roads.
Machar spokesperson James Gadet also condemns the recent killings of civilians and says it's an offense to kill any civilians in the country. He insists that forces loyal to Riek Machar have been instructed not to target civilians.
We have forces on the Gibaye Road, we have forces on the Gibaye Road and the Eastern Equatoria, but they don't target civilians.
Now the question remains who these terrorists are in the country. Makwe warns that if targeted killings continue in South Sudan, the government will be forced to hunt down criminals who, he says, are hiding within their communities. He urges community leaders to cooperate with government authorities by identifying the groups planning to stage criminal activities in South Sudan.
If they don't respond, the government will act. And in case they are harmed, they should not complain, because they will be part and parcel of these terrorist groups. Anybody who harbors a criminal is a criminal. So if you don't want to harbor a criminal, send him away from your area so that you are free. Otherwise, you will be treated the same way.
Makwe says the government is in full control of the situation in the country and urges citizens to refrain from taking the law into their hands. He also warned against believing in rumors that have spread across the country saying President Salva Kiir is dead.
All these are very wild rumors which are usually created in order to cause havoc and inculcate fear into the people, so that you also create division within the people of South Sudan.
Makwe is appealing to the South Sudanese to embrace peace and stop the targeted killings of people in parts of the country. South Sudan in Focus has confirmed through Machar's spokesman that the former first vice president is in South Africa today to receive medical treatment. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
The United Nations mission in South Sudan is expressing concern over fighting across several parts of the country. ONMI says a known number of people were killed and others displaced in Leer County after SPLAIO clashed with South Sudan Army. Waki Simon Wudu has the story for VOA from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
UNMISS says serious fighting continues in southern Unity State between the South Sudan Army and the SPLAIO. UNMISS acting spokesperson Yasmin Abozien did not mention casualty figures or the number of people displaced by the fighting. Bozien says UNMISS peacekeepers were prevented from accessing areas affected by the fighting.
These are major concerns to us. We have also, as the mission received, continued reports of clashes in the Equatoria, and we are trying to verify accounts of attacks by unidentified armed men on civilian convoys traveling from Yei to Juba.
UNMISS says it is also unable to independently verify incidents along the roads in the former central Equatoria state because the government continues to block peacekeepers from patrolling the affected areas. Bozien says UNMISS forces have not been given permission to enter Yei and Morobo, where civilians are trapped by recent fighting between government forces and armed youth.
The mission is quite concerned. There's been an attempt to launch a number of patrols to the scene of the incident. The access on the ground has become challenging, despite there being commitment to unfettered access.
South Sudan Army military spokesman Brigadier General Lul Roy Kwong says his office has no knowledge of fighting in Unity State.
I'm yet to get an official report from the military authorities on the ground. Well, that's a statement from UNMISS, and I'm not going to base my responses on the statement they have released. I won't be in a position to comment until I'm officially notified by the relevant military authorities.
UNMISS is calling on all the warring parties to control their commanders to put an end to the clashes in the country.
UNMISS condemns in its strongest possible terms any return to violence that plagued the country, and we urge all to work to help the people of South Sudan.
SPLA-IO spokesman Colonel William Gadjas issued a statement earlier this week regarding clashes in Renk, Northern Upper Nile. The SPLA-IO claimed 25 government forces were killed and 5 military vehicles were captured during the fighting. The government flatly denied the SPLA-IO statements. In recent weeks, thousands of refugees have fled the country to neighboring countries after the fighting broke out in Yei River State. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Nairobi.
South Sudan's former senior army general, who resigned this week, says soldiers loyal to him are fighting South Sudan Army in Unity State. Lieutenant General Bapin Montwil says he is going to capture villages which originally belonged to Unity State but were annexed to Northern Bahr al-Ghazal when President Kiir issued decree dividing South Sudan into 28 states. He says his forces will fight the government troops across Unity State.
The group loyal to me, these are the people was a problem of land grabbing, according to the government decree of 28 states.
Which part of Unity State has been grabbed?
Part of Mayom County, part of Rukono area, part of Manga area, border to Farian, part of Mayandit, north of Ler, part of Riyadh, north of Mayom. These are grabbing by President Salva Kiir to his tribe. So this is why people are fighting for this, nothing more else.
Lieutenant Bapin, I know that you've been in the government for quite a long time. Even when President Kiir issued the decree partitioning South Sudan into 28 states, you were in the government. Why didn't you talk at that time?
Okay, I'd like to inform you, that time, the decree was issued in February. That time, I was in the government as a deputy chief of general staff. I told frankly to the president, this land you grab it, it is my land. I was born there. It's not for a lot. Since February and March. When I'm leaving to Germany for treatment, also I meet him. I repeat the same. This land is land for me, not for Dinka. We are not saving one tribe. How can I work with you if you grab my land by decree of the Republic? So already I informed him.
Land issues is politics. Why are you getting yourself into politics? You're a professional soldier. You're supposed to talk about security issues.
When we are fighting north, when we are in bush, was Dr. John Grant, we are fighting to get our land from north. You cannot take my land when we are the southerners. It's something not is beyond the politics. I'm not asking for to afford me as a minister. No, I'm asking for land. I was born there.
How many soldiers are under your control in Unity State?
Until now, it's not known, because this is my first step to resign. And these people are fighting now. They are fighting to their own problem of land issue. I'm still not reorganize all these forces.
But I'm getting reports that the forces who are fighting in Unity State are saying they are loyal to Lieutenant General Bapin Montwil.
Correct. They are loyal to me because this is their land. So everyone fights for his land.
What is your next move after resigning from the South Sudan Army? What are you trying to do? What do you want to do with your life?
If there's a peace, one can stay in his house. We need peace.
And how will peace come when people like you are now fighting over land? How can peace come to the country?
Peace will come. Peace will not come through UN, through what? Peace will come through the Sudanese itself. Peace will not come through UN, will not come through IGAD, will not come through anything else. But the Sudanese will solve this problem or his own issue.
But how will they solve this problem? You are just telling me here that your land is everything to you. You will not surrender it to other people. Now, that is
correct.
A very strong statement, and it means you will do everything to defend your land. That does not sound like
land,
you want
my
peace.
Land, no compromise for my land, actually. So even Salva Kiir, I told him frankly, no compromise for my land. So you want to remove me from deputy chief of the staff, just remove me, because land is everything. So
you are sounding like there is a tribal issue here. I thought the problem was about land.
The problem about land, the land was grabbed by a president. President is a Dinka tribe. If it is a government decree, why not 1 meter of land? Why he didn't give 1 meter of land from Dinka to Nuer? 1 meter only.
You are one people. That's my understanding, that you're all South Sudanese, no matter where you come from.
We are one people, but we are not one people to grab my land. Everything has right in his land. Can fight more than 100 years for this land.
What is your next destination from Nairobi? Where are you going?
It's yet.
What do you mean? What do you mean it's yet?
I mean that it is still. Everything is step by step.
So what is the next step?
Next step is still yet.
That's Lieutenant General Baping Montuil, former Deputy Chief of Staff for Moral Orientation in South Sudan Army. Montuil resigned on Monday after returning from medical treatment in Germany. He was speaking to me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, earlier today. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, local traders in Torit protest a move to relocate them. Stay tuned.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
Which African country do you admire most?
I admire Nigerians. They are very bold and they are go-getters.
I admire DRC Congo because of their music. They perform the best of music ever in Africa. Even though you don't understand what their language, but you admire their music.
I admire Ghana. It's my country, it's my motherland. Moreover, the culture of Ghanaians are unique. We are also very, very hospitable.
I love my country, South Sudan, and I'm so proud of it, despite of the ongoing ups and downs.
I admire Botswana, because Botswana is a good country, is a cool country. You know, they don't have this other corrupt, other things that are happening in other countries. They're like just like Switzerland in Europe, yeah.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Traders in Torit are protesting a decision by the town's mayor to shut down and relocate a local market near the airport. Local restaurant owners say they cannot afford to pay rent to municipal authorities or erect new structures at the new location. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Torit.
Torit Town municipal authorities have given traders at Ilangi Market only 2 weeks to relocate to Omoleha Market, a place where traders were also evicted from last year. Dozens of shops owners say the timing of the relocation is wrong given the country's serious economic problems. Hawaii Girfasio sells food in a small restaurant. She says the municipal authorities require each trader to pay 6,000 South Sudanese pounds to secure a place in the new market. Speaking in Arabic, Girfasio says most traders cannot afford the new government fees charged to traders in the new market.
I cannot get the money. First of all, what we get from our businesses here, children are hungry. The market is expensive since. If they force us out of here, we will just go home. It is here where I make something for tea and food for children.
Adud Peter resides near the Ilangi market. She says relocating the market means taking services far from residents of the town. Adud says the location of the new market is not accessible to majority of the town's residents. Speaking in colloquial Arabic, Adud says the government should consult residents before relocating the market.
We want this market to remain here, and instead they should open butchery here so that those who have little money can have meat for their children at home. This market allows many of us buy flour from retailers. This market is not affecting us, but is helping a lot.
Many shop owners worry they will lose their customers when the market is relocated. Alex Garang has a small shop where he sells biscuits, sugar, and other food items in the Ilangi market. Garang is pleading with the government to reverse the decision.
The close of this business center has affected us. in one way because we are not much informed the last about closing our businesses without giving us adequate time to prepare so that we can be able to move from one place to another. You know, as a business person, whenever you close the business center that was around here, opportunity for getting more customers to come and help us, this sign, that one is not there. So our businesses go down.
Business owner Ahmed Bala agrees with Garang. He's speaking in Arabic. Ahmed says building a new shop is cost prohibitive.
This business is the one helping me and my family. For me to erect a new shop is difficult. First of all, there are no building materials, and above all, expensive. I cannot remove this old iron sheet to the new location.
Torii Town municipal authorities insist the market must be relocated for security reasons. The authorities claim that several attacks along Torii Kapweta Road by unknown gunmen have been planned in the market. Speaking in Arabic, Torii Town Mayor Eddie Williams says traders resisting the order to relocate will be forcefully evicted tomorrow.
This place has become a place of playing cards, idol sitting, and spy center. When someone is going to Kapweta, they will call the people in the bush and give them details of a car and the people inside. And then the car will be stopped on the road, and then the identified people are picked and killed. That is why we have decided to close and relocate it.
William says the relocation is to protect business people from being robbed, but he did not explain the state government's plan to protect the business community affected by the move. Last year, the former governor of the then Eastern Equatoria State issued a similar order relocating Omoliha Market to Torii Modern Market, and many business owners and residents protested the decision. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Torii.
The World Health Organization says the widespread consumption of sugar is a major factor in the growing global obesity epidemic. As Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva, the UN agency is calling on governments to tax sugary drinks to lower consumption and reduce this worldwide health risk.
A new report finds more than one-third of adults around the world was overweight and half a billion were obese in 2014. More troubling, the World Health Organization estimates 42 million children under age 5 were overweight or obese last year. This represents an increase of about 11 million during the past 15 years. Nearly half of these children live in Asia and 25% in Africa. The UN agency says unhealthy diets are behind the rise in diabetes, which now accounts for more than 422 million cases and an estimated 1.5 million deaths a year. It says the consumption of sugar, including products like sugary drinks, is a major factor in the global increase of obesity and diabetes. Temo Vaka-Nivolu is the coordinator for WHO's Department for the Prevention on Non-Communicable Diseases. He tells VOA putting a tax on sugary drinks would reduce consumption and save lives.
If we increase the tax and that gets passed on to the consumers, resulting in a 20% increase in price, you are more likely to get, when I say proportional, a 20% reduction in the consumption. In addition, you will be more likely to achieve the ultimate health outcome we are aiming for, which is the reduction in obesity and diabetes.
Vaka-Nivolu says Mexico, which increased sugary drinks by 10% in 2014, had a 6% reduction in consumption by the end of the year. Among poor people, that number decreased by 17%. The WHO report says China tops the worldwide obesity rankings in terms of numbers, with 43 million men and 46 million women. The United States, which has been bumped into second place, has 41.7 million men and 46 million women who are obese. The WHO recommends people keep their sugar intake to below 10% of their total energy needs and reduce it to less than 5% for additional health benefits. It warns people to be careful in their calculations because sugar is everywhere. For example, one tablespoon of ketchup contains one teaspoon of sugar, and an average cup of breakfast cereal contains about 4 teaspoons of sugar. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Still on health matters, some people test better than others to malaria mosquitoes. Scientists say altering how we test could lead to better insect repellents. VOA's Jessica Bowman reports.
Have you ever noticed how some people are bitten by mosquitoes more than others? Scientists are trying to figure out why and turn that information into a repellent to protect all people from malaria. Such a repellent might be able to put a dent in the 214 million people who become infected every year, mostly in Africa. Some 450,000 people, most of them children, die every year of malaria. Researchers from the Johns Hopkins University have found evidence that smell is not the only thing that attracts malaria mosquitoes to human hosts for a blood meal. Christopher Potter is a professor of neuroscience who works with the sensing ability of mosquitoes. Unlike humans who have one nose, Potter says mosquitoes actually have 3 pairs of noses. These include 2 antennae and 2 maxillary palps, which are fuzzy appendages below the insect's head and are parallel to the feeding needle. At the end of that feeding needle, or proboscis, are the labella, 2 small regions with neurons that recognize smell and tastes, according to Potter.
So this suggests that the mosquito brain might also have a region of the brain that's dedicated to flavor, to combining smell and taste. And that is something that they're very likely doing when they're actually landing on us and looking around for a place to bite. They're actually smelling us and tasting us. And perhaps that means they're also flavoring us, and that is part of what they're looking for when they're trying to decide who they should bite from and where they're going to bite.
Potter and colleagues made the discovery about the malaria mosquito Anopheles gambiae by making certain neurons in the insect's noses glow green or fluorescence. They wanted to trace those external sensory neurons to the brain. The green glowing label lit up neurons in the brain when they were exposed to complex odors. These help the mosquitoes distinguish between human blood from that of other warm-blooded animals. It's the first time scientists were able to pinpoint the exact location of the senses of smell and taste in mosquitoes. By studying smell-detecting neurons, the finding suggests that it's possible mosquitoes like not only the smell of humans, but our flavor as well.
The long-term goal is to identify better repellents, things that will be essentially better, safer, cheaper, and more effective, that we can manufacture at a more larger scale and distribute it across the world.
The research was published in the journal Nature Communications. Currently, there's an insect repellent called DEET that's widely used in malaria-endemic regions, but it's not 100% effective, and a fair amount of the chemical needs to be applied to the skin to repel mosquitoes. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
Well, that report about how we test to mosquitoes brings us to the end of our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Anna Sudani by Gordon Kong. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Adagulay.